Corcoran was the lead Trump lawyer who handled his responses to the U.S. Justice Department when federal prosecutors started investigating the unauthorized retention of classified documents. He searched the resort when Donald Trump was subpoenaed for any such materials in June of last year.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Nur Muhammadpour. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Nur Muhammadpour, for today's discussion, we want to talk about freedom of speech and its limits. What is the views and the opinion of the religion of Islam regarding freedom of speech? Are the people allowed, for example, even to criticize Prophet Muhammad and the Ahlul Bayt, or even use blasphemous words? Is it, for example, allowed, and was it permitted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to do so? And if a person, for example, says such a thing and is considered as a murtad, as an apostate, then I've heard that according to the system of Islamic punishment, he is going to be executed. What kind of freedom of speech could it be? First of all, give us the true definition of freedom of speech according to Islam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know that freedom of speech, freedom of thought and opinion is one of the basic human rights. Nobody can deny that. Everybody, first of all and per se, had the rights of the, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of opinion and thoughts. And there is no doubt about these issues. But the point is here, sometimes actually one person wanted to have some kind of desecration for the sacred religions. I'm not talking about the divine religion of Allah, Islam. Rather, I want to talk about all religious, you know, denominations.
Yes.
Nobody can accept this sacrilege. Nobody can accept desecration to any religion. You know, Buddhism, any kind of religion that you imagine, nobody can tolerate these kinds of sacrilege. And it's human being considered to be disrespect, okay?
Yes.
And if you have these kind of, you know, sacrilege and desecration to the any kind of religion. Talking about this issue, sometimes some people wanted to, for example, may Allah, God forbid, wanted to have some kind of insults to the noble Prophet Muhammad, which we call it Sabbun Nabi.
Yes.
Some kind of insult to the noble Prophet Muhammad, wanted to disrespect the Ahlul Bayt or his the pure progeny of noble Prophet Muhammad, wanted to desecrate the noble Quran, for example, the fire noble Quran. You know, Unfortunately, we see in the media.
In Sweden, they did it recently.
Unfortunately, this, you know, some people wanted to just fire the noble Quran.
Yes.
You know, I think human being by the nature, I'm not talking about the perspective of the Muslim, rather from the perspective of human being.
Yes.
Nobody can accept this kind of sacrilege. If you fire Bible, God forbid, if you fire noble Quran, if you fire any sacred books, who can tolerate that? I think it is not acceptable. Rationally speaking, from the perspective of human being, it is not acceptable. You have to respect, you know, the sacred books, sacred people, and the, you know, sacred people, beliefs of the people. You know, the concept of the blasphemy, the concept of the apostasy, I just want to explain it from these points. The person who is, you know, apostate is actually disrespecting and, you know, desecrating the some kind of tenets of the religion of Islam.
Sorry, before getting into that, who do we call a murtad?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I want to. It has a lot of explanation and condition to that.
Yes.
The apostate, first of all, let me go to that issue. First of all, this person denies the tenet of the religion, like the unity of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, prophethood of noble prophet Muhammad, all the day of judgment. Okay?
Yes.
And then this person make it public. You know, this is very important. Let me explain it via a narration of the Imam As-Sadiq. He said that كل مسلم بين المسلمين ارتد عن الإسلام وجهد محمد النبوة وكذبه. If you deny the prophethood of noble prophet Muhammad, if a person negate the prophethood of noble prophet Muhammad publicly, you know, these are conditions for the apostasy. It is very important. I want to say that if you want to understand whether this person is apostate or not, it is not easy. It is not easy to attribute apostasy to the an individual. First of all, as I said, it should refuse and to negate the tenet of the religion of Islam, and then to make it publicly. And the concept, and third, it is a concept of juhud and takdhib. It is very important.
Yes.
So let me explain it. Sometimes you have some doubt, some scientific, you know, you want to have some debate with some people, okay? It's okay. You want to have debate, you want to have discussion with the scholars, you have some doubts about some of the tenets of religions. All of that is granted. It's okay. Nobody have any, we cannot attribute apostasy to these people because we want to have scientific, you know, discussion here, a scholarly analysis here. This is granted. On the other hand, we have some people, they just want to have the concept of juhud, okay? Negations of the religion, tenets of religion, publicly.
Okay.
Very important. And the concept of takdhib, you know, which means to deny and to negate the prophethood of noble prophet Muhammad publicly. For example, via media, you say that I do not accept it at all. And, you know, it is not a scholarly question. It is not doubt about that. Just you want to arrogantly.
Intentionally and on purpose. Religion and prophets.
Not kind of opposing, but more than that, sometimes you add some kind of desecration to that.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah,
you'll find your way.
For example, this is like what Salman Rushdie with authoring satanic verses did
exactly
on that time. And then the issue was fatwa, but we can say a fatwa was issued by the late Imam Khomeini against him. That's right.
Exactly. You know, this is kind of, you know, sometimes is the case is a case of sacrilege, the case of desecration. Nobody can accept that. To desecrate any, you know, any sacred religions or the, for example, sacred books or people. But I want to emphasize on this point again and again because it is very important. The religion of Islam is a religion of intellect, the religion of wisdom. We invite all people to have conversation, to have debate, dialogue about Islamic issues. You can talk, you can have your own research about Islam, questions, anything. You know, scholarly analysis, these are acceptable and these are actually invitation from a side of Islamic scholars. But sacrilege, insults, this kind of opposition to the tenets of Islam, I think rationally speaking, nobody can accept that.
Rich, for example, the cartoons that were painted recently by Charlie Hebdo magazine in France. Is it a kind of irtidad or apostasy?
Of course, if we can call it irtidad for those people who, if they are Muslim actually, or they have the background of, you know, Islam, because we
It has to be Muslim.
Exactly, because we have two kind of irtidad. First of all, fitri and milli. I do not want to go to the
No, it's good. It's good to know.
Yeah.
Because I want to know that is the person who is non-Muslim and, for example, disrespects the saints of Islam, is he considered as a murtad or not?
Yeah, this is not irtidad. If that person is actually is not Muslim or didn't have his parents, they were not Muslim, it is not considered to be apostasy. Rather, it is kind of, a sacrilege or kind of unbelief, if you wanted to have this kind of desecration. We are talking about the Muslim or the person, his parents, they were Muslim,
Yes.
It has two categorization. And they want to revert from Islam and to oppose Islam and to come to the, unbelief. We are talking about these people. Yes.
That's all right. And the maximum punishment for a murtad in Islam is execution, isn't it?
You know, as I said, first of all, it has be if you want to recognize an individual to be apostate, extremely difficult, very rarely. It's happened that this person is apostate.
Okay.
Because in most cases, as I mentioned, they have some scientific, or they have some scholarly doubt about this issue. Oh, but they have some question in their mind. These are, imagination, these questions, they are not considered to be apostasy. Or, for example, that person, maybe they are in some difficult situation, for example, in some kind of pressure, they have this kind of opposition to the religion of Islam. We are not talking about these people. Rather, we are talking in a very rare situation, some people publicly, they want to oppose Islam and to want to desecrate the tenets of religions. In that case, we have the concept of apostasy. Yes.
That's all right. So isn't it against freedom of speech? This is, of course, a new slogan and the motto in the world. Freedom of speech, freedom of thought, or something like that. Do not ban the people from saying this, from saying that, okay? So how can Islam answer such a question?
Of course, these kind of, as I mentioned in the beginning of this episode, the freedom of thought, freedom of speech is one of the human right, nobody can deny that.
Yes.
But unfortunately, those people, I'm talking about some of the Western countries and governments, when they talk about the freedom of speech, even in their own country, they do not permit people to talk about certain issues. Okay? You can have a lot of examples about that. You know that this is a political agenda.
Yes.
Yes, and this is, they do not want to defend the human right. They do not want to talk. Rather, it is they want to play by this point and by these slogans. And the reality of that, if you go, for example, even in the Islamic Republic of Iran, I think you can find the most freedom of speech, because we have a lot of groups, they are opposing the government. They have some differences, debate with the government. Even with the divine religion of Islam, but they talk easily, they have debate, and they do not face any problems.
That's all right. Thank you much, Sheikh Nurmanpour, for a nice elaboration regarding the definition of apostasy and is it against freedom of speech or not. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayn wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayn wa hasan. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين.
حسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. And for my today's speak, I want to go over a new subject with the hope that it may change our vision about the problems of our life. I need to add that my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic narrations. The theme I want to talk about is a fact, which is that the scale of happiness and hardship usually stay at the same level, or in better terminology, if we imagine that there is a scale for weighing the amount of the weight of our happiness and sadness, the two bottoms of the scale stay in the same row. In a general view, humans are all on the same level in terms of difficulty and comfort. Let me explain this point through some examples. We imagine that there are parents who have several children. Their life is very beautiful, very cheerful because of many children they have. But on the other hand, there are parents who cannot have children due to some illnesses. For example, wife is barren, whatever of medicine they can take or try to visit specialist doctors, they cannot solve the problem and they have no children. At first glance, one may say that the parents who have many children or enough children are happier and more fortunate. But if we look deeper and study the scenario, our judgment will change. Let me explain it. The parent who have children, even though they are happy, but having children confronts them with many struggles in their life. Among these difficulties, we can name the problems, the wife, the mother faces during pregnancy and delivery. The problem of children that are getting sick. Sometimes the parents see that the children's illness worsens in the middle of the night, and they have to send the child or children to the hospital, the children's food and clothing expenses, the expenses of kindergarten fees, and the expenses of their education. Finally, I mean the expenses of their marriage or the concerns that parents have about choosing a good spouse for their children. Sometimes a child may die due to illness and inflicts a lot of emotional damage on the parents. I don't want to list the problems for having children, but I just want to point to the mentioned fact that next to being happy with having a child, there exist some of the mentioned problems as well. Now, let's think about the second parents who do not have children. They may be sad about this matter, but none of the mentioned problems exist for them. They have no children, but they have also no concern about, their expenses, their illness, where to send them for education. They do not wake up at the middle of night because of the cry of the children and so on and so forth. Their life is less cheerful from this aspect, but they are free from many problems. Let's have a short break, and I will be back soon to explain this point more.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
We were talking about a fact in our worldly life. The fact is that the amount of joy and sorrow of humans is often on the same level. Those who enjoy a kind of blessing, that blessing is mixed with a number of hardship, and those who are deprived from a blessing, they also are freed from a number of difficulties. This point is mentioned in one of the Imam Ali's eloquent speeches, as the Imam describes the life on this world by saying, لم يكن امرء منها في حبرة إلا أعقبته بعدها عبرة. No one has seen happiness in the world except that the world makes him face tears and sighs after it. فإن جانب منها إعزوزب وحلولا. And if the life is sweet and pleasant on one side, أمر منها جانب فأوبا. It will bring bitterness and create death on the other side. Then the Imam continues, وَلَا يَنَالُ امْرُؤٌ مِنْ قَزَارَتَهَا رَغَبًا إِلَّا أَلْحَقَتْهُ مِنْ نَوَائِبِهَا تَعْبًا. No one gets what he wants from the blessing and pleasure of the world, unless soon or later the world will make him suffer from its problems and hardships. There are many examples for, getting your mind closer to the point that the scale of hardship and happiness usually is the same. For instance, if we compare a married couple with someone who has not yet married. As marriage has its own benefit, remaining single and its own relaxation and rest. And as being single is resultant in some difficulties, getting married accompanies with its hardship. For example, the one who is single can decide for himself or herself, but a couple needs to come to the conclusion in many issues. A couple's expenses of life is higher, but the single one should be just worried about his own expenses. Another example. For instance, we can consider someone who has a lot of wealth and property, that if we compare it with another one who has less money, we see that having a lot of wealth makes the mind of the owner busier with how to protect his money, how to invest it. Even if there is a loss in a transaction or a loss in a stock exchange, the one who has a lot of money sustains more loss than the one who has less money. Indeed, having a lot of wealth for its turn makes the life easier in many cases. In another example, the one who is genius and has a powerful intellect, he has many worries about every details in his life. But the one whose intellect is not that much functional, next to not being genius, he has less concern about a number of things in his life. Let's come to the conclusion. Just as a couple who have children, when they face a severe problem about their children and their mind is totally involved with that problem, for example, when they miss one of their children, just as they think those who have no children are happier, on the other hand, those who have no children think those who are bestowed with many children are happier and their life is more cheerful. This is a normal fact about our life in this world. If we have this vision about our life, we would become more satisfied with our destiny, with our fate, and do not regret others who enjoy a blessing, since everyone has his own happiness and his own hardship. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
In the limelight.
Iran and China have recently signed 20 cooperation documents and memoranda of understanding at a high-profile meeting in Beijing. The agreements entail cooperation in a diverse field, including crisis management, tourism, information and communications technology, environment, international trade, intellectual property, agriculture, exports, health and medical sector, media activities, sports and cultural heritage. China has strengthened its position as Iran's top trade partner in recent years. During the first 10 months of the current Iranian year, China has exported $12.7 billion worth of goods to Iran, and its imports from Iran stood at $12.6 billion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote in this regard, Chinese President Xi Jinping recently met with Iranian President Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi in Beijing, where the two leaders agreed on deepening Iran-China comprehensive strategic partnership. The two sides are expected to increase coordination under multilateral platforms such as the UN and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, and inject positive energy to regional and global peace. President Raisi's three-day visit to China, the first since he took office in August 2021, will accelerate the implementation of the 25-year agreement between the two countries, Chinese experts have said. This meeting between the two leaders will also guide bilateral cooperation to a higher level, underscoring the deepened mutual trust between the two countries despite geopolitical uncertainties, they said. China has always viewed and developed its relations with Iran from a strategic perspective, she said to Dr. Raisi, noting that no matter how the international and regional situation changes, China will unswervingly develop friendly cooperation with Iran, push for new development of the China-Iran Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, and play a positive role in world peace and human progress. China supports Iran in safeguarding its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and national dignity, and supports its fight against unilateralism, hegemony, and external forces that interfere in Iran's domestic affairs and sabotage its stability, she said. According to Global Times, the Chinese side is also willing to deepen the comprehensive partnership by deepening cooperation in trade, agriculture, industry, and infrastructure, as well as expand cooperation under the Belt and Road Initiative. For his part, Dr. Raisi said, the time-tested friendship between Iran and China has become even firmer as time goes by. As two independent major countries, the Iran-China relations are based on the spirit of mutual respect, and they are sincere strategic partners worthy of mutual trust. Iran's commitment to deepening and upgrading the Iran-China Comprehensive Strategic Partnership is unswerving and will not be affected by any changes in the international and regional situation, Dr. Raisi stressed. After the meeting, the two leaders jointly witnessed the signing of a number of bilateral cooperation documents in the fields of agriculture, trade, tourism, environmental protection, health, disaster relief, culture, and sports, according to Xinhua. During the visit of Iranian president, the two sides will issue a joint statement, Xinhua reported. Experts said that in contrast to the U.S. waning influence in the West Asia-North Africa region, regional countries are seeking diversified relations with other countries, which conveys a positive significance for building a multipolar world free from U.S. hegemony. Iran and China established a comprehensive strategic partnership during Xi's visit to Iran in 2016, since when the two sides have moved forward to promote the development of this partnership, including cooperation under the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative. The purpose of Raisi's visit to China this time is to further promote Iran-China relations and the implementation of the comprehensive strategic partnership. Wu Saik, former Chinese special envoy on the West Asia region, told the Global Times recently. In 2021, Iran and China signed a 25-year agreement to enhance comprehensive cooperation in a range of fields. Under the deal, the two sides would tap the potential economic and cultural cooperation and make plans for long-term cooperation. The 25-year cooperation program, including energy, trade, and infrastructure, has faced obstacles, especially when the U.S. escalated sanctions on both Iran and China. The two sides will likely focus on how to advance practical cooperation between Iran and China amid the growing external uncertainties. Liu Zhangmin, a professor at the West Asia Studies Institute of Shanghai International Studies University told the Global Times recently. Regarding the international situation, Iran and China have common or similar positions. The two countries oppose hegemony and unilateralism and emphasize the respect for the rights and interests of all countries, Raisi said in an article published on People's Daily recently. During the meeting with Xi recently, Dr. Raisi said Iran welcomes more Chinese companies to invest in the country and more Chinese tourists to travel there. Iran also firmly supports China's proposed Belt and Road Initiative, the Global Development Initiative, and the Global Security Initiative. Iran's National Development Plan and its look to the East strategy are highly compatible with the BRI, and deepened cooperation provides a guarantee for high-quality development that will accelerate Iran's economic growth and help consolidate its status in transport and energy. Zhu Yongbiao, executive director of the Research Center for the Belt and Road at Lanzhou University, told the Global Times recently. Zhu said, "Such deepened cooperation is significant for China, including ensuring energy security and boosting high-quality BRI projects." During the meeting between Dr. Raisi and Xi, the two sides also agreed to increase coordination on regional and global issues and maintain active coordination under the auspices of multilateral organizations such as the UN and SCO. With official approval from Tehran, Iran is one step closer to joining the SCO. As an important power in the region, Iran's admission into the SCO will help expand its influence, Wu said. During the meeting between the two heads of state, both emphasized a rejection of unilateralism, hegemony, and foreign interference in the domestic affairs of Iran. Chinese experts believe that in contrast to the U.S. declining influence in the West Asia region, China's proposed development and security initiatives will play a more active role in promoting peace and stability and resolving conflicts. She praised Iran's willingness to improve relations with its neighboring countries, supporting regional countries to resolve disputes through negotiations and playing a constructive role in regional peace and stability. China will continue playing a constructive role in resuming full negotiations in the Iran nuclear deal and supporting Iran to safeguard its legitimate rights, helping the nuclear issue to be resolved soon, he told Dr. Raisi. Compared with the U.S., China is perfectly capable of maintaining good relations with Iran, Wu said. First of all, China does not interfere in other countries' internal affairs. Second, China has always sought cooperation rather than encouraging confrontation. In the face of regional disputes, China has always played a role in promoting peace talks and easing tensions, he said. Also, Bloomberg noted Chinese leader Xi Jinping pledged to deepen ties with Tehran after meeting Iran's president, Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi, in Beijing, weeks after the U.S. said it would increase pressure on China to stop buying Iranian oil. Meanwhile, Press TV reported Iran and China have a potential to triple the value of their annual trade to over $70 billion, according to a senior Iranian businessman who coordinates private sector trade between the two countries. Majid Reza Hariri, who chairs Iran-China Joint Chamber of Commerce, said in remarks published recently that Tehran and Beijing can capitalize on their growing political and energy ties to boost bilateral trade. He said trade between Iran and China has been stable in recent years despite U.S. sanctions targeting Iran's access to international markets. Hariri, in an interview with the official government newspaper Iran, said, "We have had around $24 billion worth of trade with the Chinese, even under the worst conditions of sanctions, and we can reach at least triple that figure." The businessman hailed China's policy of maintaining close economic relations with Iran despite U.S. sanctions, adding that trade with Beijing has been much easier for Iran compared with other trade partners since 2018 when Washington imposed its sweeping sanctions on Tehran. He said China has increased its purchase of Iranian crude oil despite U.S. bans, adding that the country even declared some limited state purchases of Iranian oil in its customs figures to show that it officially rejects the unilateral sanctions imposed on Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, moderation in thoughts. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of moderation in thoughts in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings, we see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created everything with moderation on the basis of justice. And therefore, we must also follow the path of justice and be moderate in our lives. Therefore, one of the things and the first and foremost thing which we can do in order to have this moderation in our life is to have moderation in our thoughts. We should have our thoughts in line with the teachings of the Islam, in line with the teachings of the Quran. And therefore, when we observe the halal and haram, and we control our thoughts in a way that it does not exceed the limits, we can have a life with moderation. And therefore, we see that Amirul Mu'mineen has said, "Man fakkara qabla al-amali kathura sawabahu." The one who thinks before practicing, he has exceeded his thawab, he has exceeded his rewards. Why? Because the rewards are given for a person who thinks before practicing, practicing something or practically performing something. Similarly, we have the saying that think before you speak. And this is also one of the ways of bringing this moderation in our life, that when we think about what we are about to say, when we think about what we're going to do, if the thing that I'm performing, I need to think that this practice that I'm going to do, this action that I'm going to perform, is it in line with the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt? Is it in line with the teachings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or is it not? If it will result the anger of Allah, then I need to avoid such thing, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of moderation in thoughts in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that we need to think before we speak. We need to think before we practice, as it has been said in the Islamic teachings. And it has been emphasized by Amirul Mu'mineen as well, that a person who performs actions by thinking about them, and he does not perform anything without having thoughts about that, without thinking about it, without thinking about the consequences which he's going to have, then obviously he is following the moderate way. We know that sometimes we perform the things with ignorance. We should not do that. Sometimes we perform things without thinking about the consequences, and then we have the bad results. And later when we sit, we think that if I could have thought before it, if I knew the consequences, or maybe if I have discussed this with the others, whether to perform or not, I wouldn't have do this or such thing, and I wouldn't be in such a situation. Therefore, Islam teaches us that a Muslim, if he wants to have this moderate life, he is the one who thinks before practicing. He is the one who basically spends more time in thinking. About Allama Tabatabai, it is said that because he wrote the Tafsir al-Mizan, the exegesis of the Quran on 20 volumes, he used to spend most of his time in thinking. We can see there were many, many Islamic scholars who used to spend their life in most of the time of the day in thinking. And this thinking was something which was taking them towards the perfection. Because, you know, when we think about why am I living a Muslim life? Why I'm praying? Why I'm doing this? All these answers are given there. And when we think on the and ponder on the verses of the Quran, we find the reality. And that's why Quran also says in many times, أَفَلَا تَتَفَكَّرُونَ. Don't you ponder, which means that Allah is calling us towards pondering before actions. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Supreme Leader's speech on the occasion of Mab'as. The following is delivered on July 30, 2008 by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Mab'as. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I congratulate all those who seek justice and freedom in the world, the great Islamic Ummah, the faithful and dear Iranian nation, and you, dear brothers and sisters, who have attended this meeting on the occasion of this great Eid. Remembering Mab'as is not limited to remembering historical events only. This is the point we should keep in mind when remembering this great event, which is a precious memory for humanity. Rather, this glorious memory is in fact like repeating and reviewing an unforgettable lesson for the Islamic Ummah, the people, as well as the prominent figures and elites of the Islamic Ummah, including politicians, scientists, and intellectuals. Secondly, it is an important lesson for all the humans. Remembering Mab'as is like repeating a lesson, emphasizing a model, and reviewing an instructive event. There are many aspects to this event, and in fact, one has to talk for hours and write several books if one is to eloquently, even if briefly, talk about the different aspects of Mab'as. However, even when one briefly considers this event, there are many lessons to be learned. If you look at the events, you will see the Holy Prophet of Islam with a message that included everything humans needed for perfection. Started his duty and began to promote Islam in a society that was devoid of the desired ideals.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, carried the message of knowledge, yet there was no knowledge in that society. He carried the message of justice, yet there was no trace of justice in that society, and powerful people and bullying rulers dominated people's lives and possessions. He was the messenger of morality, lenience, forgiveness, justice, kindness, yet that society was devoid of such characteristics in the real sense of the word. The society was full of unkind, bullying, immoral, ignorant, and prejudiced people who were unjustifiably arrogant and who had their hearts set on carnal desires. It was in such tough and fanatic conditions and in such a dry desert that the Holy Prophet of Islam grew up. And this 13-year period finally ended in the establishment of the Prophet's rule. He formed a community on the basis of monotheism, knowledge, justice, morality, ethics, and generosity. He transformed humility into dignity and savagery into brotherhood. He turned fanaticism into tolerance and reasoning. He transformed a state of ignorance into knowledge. He built a strong and logical foundation on the basis of which Muslims could reach the peaks of global civilizations for centuries and could rise to new heights which were unprecedented in human history.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
The
Round the World with Reporters.
Heads of NGOs in Syria have gathered to loudly voice an urgent need for help. In Damascus, more than 550 NGOs read out a statement before media outlets calling on the U.S. to lift its unilateral economic sanctions on Syria, explaining the years-long siege deprived Syria from its basic needs and equipment needed to rescue those affected by the deadly earthquake.
Today, I apologize to the victims who we heard their voices under the rubble but could not help. Our volunteers were hearing them but couldn't save them because we do not have necessary equipment. 12 years of sanctions left us without required vehicles and rescue equipment. Many people died under the rubble because of those sanctions.
Speakers say the recent ease of U.S. sanctions on Syria to help humanitarian aid reach the country is not effective. That's because banks, companies, and governments around the world are still reluctant to engage with Syria, as they might face legal obstacles in the future. Western states claim that food and medicine is not included in their list of sanctions, but the reality is vastly different.
Sanctions have affected my life, my neighbors, and all Syrian people. We don't have fuel or electricity, and this has raised prices of everything like food and medicine. This is unbearable, especially after the earthquake.
We all here came to say lift economic sanctions. This country cannot stand any more suffering. Even before the earthquake, we were collapsing economically. Those sanctions are only affecting the ordinary people, not the government.
Here, rescue workers are in a battle against time. The death toll keeps rising, and those who could get away from the earthquake are now struggling to survive with a lack of food and shelter. Syrians say it's about time the U.S. and its Western allies end the economic siege that has caused enormous pain and suffering for innocent citizens. They ask for a just and fair world where humanity comes first before all political agendas. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
We're used to the revolving door of Westminster politics with prime ministers coming and going at dizzying speed. North of the border, things have been much more stable for many years, until this week.
In my head and in my heart, I know that time is now, that it is right for me, for my party, and for the country. And so today I am announcing my intention to step down as First Minister and leader of my party.
Speculation is rife about why she quit, such as the impact of the pandemic and the UK's top court ruling last year against Scottish Government's ability to hold a second independent referendum without approval from the British Parliament. But there's one reason that stands out the most.
Her undoing was brought about by the very controversial GRR bill, which would have given people the ability to change their gender after 3 months without a medical certificate. This outraged many feminist groups in Scotland, and it was passed with a big majority in the Scottish Parliament, but was immediately blocked by the Westminster Parliament.
Sturgeon's resignation has also raised the important question of what will happen to Scotland's independence aspirations in her absence from frontline politics. After all, she was the architect of the referendum in 2014 and has pushed for a second one since the first didn't get a majority vote.
The majority of Scots do want independence. This stepping down of the First Minister will be seen as a setback, but it's not a major setback.
With that in mind, a lot will depend on who emerges as the leader of Sturgeon's Scottish Nationalist Party. Some of the names who might throw their hats in the ring: John Swinney, Deputy First Minister; Hamza Youssef, Scottish Cabinet Secretary for Healthcare and Social Care; Kate Forbes, Cabinet Secretary for Finance and Economy; and Angus Robertson, Cabinet Secretary for the Constitution, External Affairs and Culture.
Successive Conservative governments here in London have said that the 2014 referendum was a once-in-a-generation decision and that it cannot be repeated anytime soon. In response, Nicola Sturgeon said she would turn the next Scottish elections into a de facto referendum to ramp up pressure on London to grant another vote. But without her in the driver's seat, it'll now be up to her successor to deliver what she promised. Saeed Purizab, London.
This is all they have to survive with for now. A little crumbling space filled with dirt and garbage. This Rohingya refugee camp on the outskirts of New Delhi is no more than an open prison for the members of the community who face constant threats and intimidation from law enforcement